Hi everyone, welcome back to the Pathfinder 101 podcast. This is Swanik Jaikumar. And, as you know, in this podcast series we try to examine different professions and career paths by talking to experts in those fields. If you're new to this podcast, I encourage you to listen to the introduction episode to get an idea for what this podcast is about.
Today's guest is Mr. Matt McBride, CISO and CIO at Modo Payments. Thank you for taking time out of your day for this interview. Really appreciate it. And let's jump right into the questions.
Sounds good.
What does a chief information officer, a CIO, do? And what does a chief information security officer do?
So in broad terms, a chief information officer or CIO is the most senior technologist in an organization. That is, they're responsible for all of the systems, the analysts, the developers, the testers, the architects, the network resources for a company. Now, some organizations may add additional titles that address specific responsibilities separately. So, for example, you could have a chief digital officer. But in broad terms, the CIO is simply the most senior technology executive in an organization.
And in many companies, the CIO and CISO are two separate roles. What are some key differences to keep in mind between the two, and how are you able to play both of these at the same time?
Well, I think in this case, it's the titles are combined because we're a smaller startups payment organization, and we only have around 20 to 25 resources in our company. So in a larger organization, you would see these roles filled by different individuals. So it's mostly a matter of how large the organization is, and larger organizations are going to have more specialization in job titles, both for individual contributors and also for executives.
What were some of the key stepping stones to where you are today? For example, like C-suite jobs always seem pretty far away and hard to reach. What are some key things to keep in mind if someone is aiming for those goals?
So I'll aim my answer at what are the stepping stones to success in general. And since I talk to a lot of students in my work at SMU, and I talk to a lot of high school students and people early in their careers, they generally are interested in how they can be successful. And so I'm happy to share what I tell them. And I think I have a somewhat informed point of view. So the first thing that I would say is persistence or grit. Angela Duckworth has a lot of really interesting work on this, on why people succeed. And she looked at people in a variety of different environments, high school, college, service academy, career work. And what she found out was the one determinant of why someone is successful is not IQ, it's not grades in school, it's not intelligence, it's not good looks. It is just grit or persistence. It's staying with a particular task for a long period of time and not accepting failure and not being willing and being willing to work harder than anyone else. So that's the first thing I would say is persistence or grit, regardless of your career. The second thing I would say is the ability to look at and learn from failure and not see it as a terminal condition. A lot of students that I see at SMU, as an example, they give a presentation in class. My goal in having them give a presentation in class is to expose them to what that's like before they get in a company. I want them to try that out, to be able to fail, to be able to learn and grow from that. And almost uniformly, none of them want to do that. And the reason why is they think, well, I'm not good at that. I've never done that. And that's exactly what college and high school are for. They're to give you those opportunities where you can fail and learn and grow and learn from your mistakes in the past. A lot of my students, I think, look at people who they regard as being successful, and they only see the successes. They don't realize that they have failed. They've had sometimes heartbreaking failures over the course of their career, and they've all learned how to recover from them. So the ability to look at and learn from failure, that's second. I would say third is a willingness to see yourself as a leader. Leadership is a choice. It's part of being willing to make decisions for yourself and others that are going to help yourself and others grow. And it's also a realization that it's not all about you. It's not all about me. In most organizations, people that are needed that really can help an organization and will be promoted quickly are people that are really effective at working with other people. So that's number three. And then number four, I would say, is a desire to be a lifelong learner, which is going to be increasingly important as technology advances continue to come at us at a dizzying pace. You can't just rest on your laurels and what you've learned to this point. You have to be a lifelong learner. So that's what I would say in terms of the four things that I think are important for success.
That was a lot of great advice packed into very quick. Thank you.
Sure.
When you were in high school, did you know exactly what career you wanted to pursue? If yes, how did you come to that decision? And did anyone influence your decision?
So when I was in high school and you and I went to the same school, I was like almost all high school students, and I had absolutely no idea of what career I wanted to pursue, none whatsoever. And so I think that that is entirely normal. And like almost everyone else in my high school, with maybe one or two exceptions, I think we were all in the same boat. Most people knew what they liked and what they were interested in, but they couldn't translate that to a 20-year career decision. So if you're listening and you're in that category, the first thing that I would say is stop, take a deep breath, and relax. Most of your peers are just like you. You don't have to make a life-changing decision at this point in time. For myself, I felt like I was pretty good at math and science. I worked hard at it, and not everyone was. So that gave me a little bit of a starting point. But just as an example, here's a short list. I just thought, okay, well, what are the careers that I've had? And I will rattle them off, and you can try to keep count. So here we go. Camp director, midshipman, operations officer, battalion commander, naval officer, engineering officer, surface warfare officer, legal officer, translator, assistant professor at Auburn University, visiting professor at Etajima, which is the Japanese Naval Academy, quality assurance engineer, logistics engineer, systems engineer, software engineer, software architect, chief architect, vice president of development, first vice president of architecture, senior vice president of software and systems, technology director, technology consultant, solution delivery director, chief information officer, executive vice president of digital transformation, chief information security officer, baseball umpire, and adjunct professor at Southern Methodist University. So if you're playing along at home, that short list represents, were you able to count, Swanick, on those?
28 or 29?
28. You are right on target. 28 different types of careers or positions. So a couple of comments. First, over the course of a career, the average American worker has 12 jobs throughout a lifetime. The average tenure for an employee at a company is less than 4 years. And right now, 65% of American workers are actively searching for a new full-time job. part of what we do at SMU and in any university is prepare people for careers. However, many of the jobs that our students will fill have not been invented yet. So there's no way we can specifically train them for that job. What we can do is prepare them in terms of knowledge and skills and work ethic that are foundational to be able to fill that roles. When I was a senior in high school, my uncle was the president of a very well-known engineering university. Something that he said to me made sense when I was considering studying engineering in college. He said, "Matt, we've got engineers that are doctors, lawyers, CEOs," and he rattled off a whole bunch of other titles. And his statement to me was, "We teach students how to think and how to solve complicated problems." And that skill is applicable across many different fields.
What are the different educational requirements required for your role? Is some sort of computer science or IT degree like really required to succeed, or are there other possible majors that you could consider?
Well, it certainly helps. What I would say is, for the roles that we're talking about, a four-year degree from an accredited university or college is required. Now, I know there's a lot of discussion about whether college is worth it, and that's a question that's worth considering. Here's what Social Security Administration says to us based on government statistics. Men with bachelor's degrees earn approximately $900,000 more in median lifetime earnings than high school graduates. Women with bachelor's degrees earn $630,000 more over the course of a lifetime. Men with graduate degrees earn $1.5 million more in lifetime earnings than high school graduates. And women with graduate degrees earn $1.1 million more over the course of a lifetime. Now, there's definitely an equity issue between men's and women's pay. That's a really big issue and one worth addressing. For the moment, I'm going to have to set that aside because although it is a very real issue, I am certainly not qualified to speak to it. The takeaway is in terms of a decision to go to a four-year college, I would say it's definitely worth it. It's required for many careers. So if you can go to college, and not everyone is fortunate, it opens up a wide variety of career fields that you would not otherwise have access to.
And is there any sort of like master's degree that's required for your career, or does it help in any way?
Well, I have two master's degrees, and I earned both of them while I was working at a full-time job and going to school at night. One is an MBA in finance, and one is a master's in computer science. I would say both were beneficial in different ways. The master's in computer science in particularly has been very helpful given the roles that I hold today, because I have the background that I need for the job.
How did you prepare yourself for this career? Were there any certain habits of networking that you had to develop, or any certain internships that helped you perhaps land your first job?
So in terms of habits, I would go back to the four things that we talked about: persistence or grit, the ability to learn from failure, a willingness to see myself as a leader and recognize it's not all about me, and a desire to be a lifelong learner. Those four things were really essential because I'm deep enough into my career that the specific knowledges I was taught in college were no longer using. I definitely have the discipline to think and solve complicated problems, but a lot of the things that we were using then have changed, and so I've had to adapt.
And you've talked about continuing education and how important that is, and especially in IT since it's constantly evolving. And one of the licenses that you have is a CISSP. Could you speak a little bit about that and the role that licenses play in your day-to-day job?
Sure. So the CISSP, or Certified Information Security Specialist, is the top level license for executives in the security field. For my career, I think it's important to have. And, you know, people might vary in terms of their perspective of whether that's important or not. I think certainly for doctors or lawyers or accountants, those are required. I feel like the CISSP is a good credential to have for me. I went out and got it after I stepped into the role. And I think other certifications I picked up along the way, their value may be more debatable.
You briefly talk about a typical workday and some of the different responsibilities that you take on as a CIO and CISO.
Sure. So I'm working at a startup right now. And so there's really no such thing as a typical day or work week. We all wear a lot of different hats, and depending on the week or the time of day, I can be reviewing our systems for security issues. I can be writing a proposal. I can be meeting with a customer, meeting with a potential customer, or developing marketing material for the company. So it really varies widely. In larger organizations, say, for example, when I was a CIO about 6 years ago at another organization, there's more specialization and structure to the schedule. So as an example, I had regular executive team meetings where all the executives in the company would get together. And then smaller committee meetings where, say, for example, we got together to talk about risk at a enterprise level with the board. And there are just in large organizations, there's more meetings with other customer executives or industry advisors. So it varies greatly, but the smaller the organization, the more breadth you're going to have in terms of the types of activities you are involved with on a day-to-day basis.
In addition to your role at Modo Payments, you're also an adjunct professor at SMU. What do you teach there? How often do you teach there? And could you just talk about how you manage that along with your full-time job?
Let's first talk about why I teach. I don't need to teach. Career, and I'm not going to get rich either teaching or selling the book that I wrote. So why teach? Why write a book? And the reason is pretty simple. There are two ways that we can learn. First, there's trial and error. And that can be painful and frustrating since you're basically trying to invent how to succeed. You make mistakes and you learn and grow, but it takes time and some of those lessons are really painful. And that's not all bad. It's just, it can be very slow. So the second way we can learn is from someone else's experience. And that's why I teach and why I wrote the book. So that is probably why your audience is listening to the podcast. They're smart enough to learn from someone else's experience. So rather than making the same mistakes that I did, they're going to skip over those mistakes and learn from the experience of myself and my peers. It's almost like you get a rapid pass and jump forward. The ideas that I teach about and talk about in my book, they're not all my bright ideas. They're ideas from consultants, other technologists, teachers that I've worked with over the years, and I have had the privilege to work with some incredibly smart people. I think for all of us, if we had to do it over again, we would do some things differently. We would definitely try to learn from others rather than make mistakes on our own. So congratulations to all your listeners for listening and trying to learn from other experiences rather than making the same mistakes that we did. So that's why I teach. I teach two courses at SMU. One is Ethical Issues in Computing. It's an overview course that studies ethical, legal, privacy, security, and intellectual property issues. And that is a junior level course at SMU. The second course that I teach is a graduate course, Leadership in Architecting Software Systems. And in that course, we study principles of leadership and principles of software architecture in building large software systems or in leading large teams. So for example, we talk about some of the concepts out of the book, one in particular called the leadership ladder that we might talk about in a minute. And then how do I do it? Well, I would just say time management is an essential skill that we all need because we all only get 24 hours in a day. So my advice would be learn how to manage your time well and make the most of your 24 hours. And that's probably a topic for an entirely different podcast series. So I'll have to leave it there.
Thank you for that great advice. Definitely time management is something we all have to work on. What do you like the most about your job and what is your least favorite aspect?
So I've learned over time that what I really enjoy is working with people, and in particular, working with students and coworkers. I get a charge out of seeing other people do things they didn't think they could do with just a little encouragement or a little guidance. I would say I was just like your listeners when I was in high school and college or early in my career. I was scared of public speaking. I didn't know how to work with people effectively, but the more I practice it and done it, the better I get at it. And learning how to work with people and how to lead people is something that can be learned. And leadership is a choice. Marcus Aurelius, who was a Roman emperor and philosopher, said, "Our life is what our thoughts make it." My encouragement to you and to your listeners is choose to be a leader, because the world needs you.
Does your profession offer a decent work-life balance? I know you talked about time management, but how exactly do you optimize time management and use it day-to-day?
Sure. So work-life balance is an interesting phrase, and it's one that seems to be really popular right now. I tend to view work as a vocation. And if you look up vocation, it's a career that's regarded as particularly worthy or requiring great dedication. So it's not unusual for me to think about work at nights or on a weekend because my mind just doesn't shut off after I finish a job at the end of the day. I do think it's important for your listeners to understand, as they think about something like work-life balance, to understand a fundamental characteristic of the workplace as they hear people talk about this. And that is that businesses and workplaces are competitive. In high school and college, you're used to this. You compete for grades and class standing to be able to get into a good school. Business is similarly competitive. So if you want to be promoted in your first job, you need to bring your A game, and that may mean you need to do some work on nights and weekends, and that's your choice.
Without going into specifics, how does compensation work? And perhaps at the different stepping stones in your career?
So compensation, because workplaces are competitive, the person that adds the most value in an organization is going to be the most highly compensated. The person that adds the least value in an organization is going to be least well compensated or maybe even laid off. So compensation in an organization, it is competitive. Typically what happens is, let's say I am looking at 30 software engineers. Someone like myself will go through and rank those software engineers from top to bottom. And guess what? The top of the list, they get better compensation than the bottom of the list. That's just the way business works.
You've talked about certain things you've stressed, such as like leadership is a choice and the four principles you were talking about earlier. What are some of the steps that someone can take just on a daily basis to make leadership more of a choice than something that they're just observing from the side?
So as a student, there's lots of different ways you can do that. One is if your instructor assigns a team project, get involved and don't be the person the rest of the team has to drag along. Be the person who is driving the team forward to finding a solution and listening to other team members and pulling their good ideas into the work that you're doing. Learn through your classroom experiences as your instructors give you opportunities in a team. If you're working at in a fast food restaurant, everybody in the fast food restaurant knows who they can depend on, who they can count on, and who's a leader. There's no title given for that, but they know who is contributing and adding the most value. Be that person. Be the one person who really learns from the experience, gets the most out of experience, and while you're at it, practice your people skills.
You've also talked about how the workplace is sort of competitive and it's like a meritocracy. How much or what percent of like all of the computer systems managing jobs do you think might be those upper level jobs, such as like in the C-suite?
It's a small percentage because there are, I think, again, it depends on the company's size. So I would say it's less than 10% that are in the C-suite, certainly. And probably if we looked a little deeper, it would be less than 5%.
This is the last question. Do you have any final thoughts or comments to share before we end this podcast?
Sure. Thank you for asking. And thank you for having me on the show today. I appreciate it. What I would say is in high school, college, early career, you're developing foundational skills and work habits that are important to you. In particular, for engineering or technical jobs, if you are good at math and science, you might really want to consider an engineering degree. It says that you worked hard in college, and you have an aptitude and some skills in technical fields. And not everyone does. The second thing that I would say is stop stressing so much about what your career is for the next 20 years, because you really can't pick a career for the next 20 years. You might have some ideas of some things that you like, and that's great, and you need to pay attention to those. But in terms of tangible actions, focused on making good decisions for the items that you face, focus on the next 2 months. Think of this in terms of the TV show, The Wall, right? On the wall, you get to place a ball at the top of the wall over a range of outcomes. And there are pegs between your ball and the bottom of the wall where you might get a favorable outcome. So think of those pegs as being individual decisions that you make. So for example, you're going to apply to College X or College Y or College Z. You make a commitment to do really well on the next test in a particular subject. Those are individual decisions that will place you over the bucket that has the outcomes that you're looking at. And so I would say focus more on those individual decisions or choices, but be aware over the long haul of the general areas that you're trying to get to, just like you're the ball bouncing down the wall. And then finally, if your listeners are on LinkedIn, because I enjoy working with people who are trying to figure out what career they want. If they want to mention your podcast, I would be happy to connect with them on LinkedIn. And I think that's probably worth another discussion on networking, maybe a different podcast, but I'll be happy to connect with them and help them get started.
Right. Thank you for all your great advice.
Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your valuable time with this podcast. I hope you found this useful. To get notified about future episodes, please subscribe or follow Pathfinder 101 on Spotify, SoundCloud, Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Also, please visit Pathfinder101.com for more career-related information not included in the podcast. If the blog or podcast adds some value to you, please like and share it with your friends and colleagues. Thanks so much for your time, and have a great rest of your day.